This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Brought to you by The Pint, Oodle Noodle, and OilersNation.com.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
We're available at Nation Radio at team1260.com. Plus, we're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. A couple of comments that have come in. Douglas McLaughlin says, I think the issue of Tambo's standing among his peers is a fair one, but in this case, it's relatively a fairer question to ask is standing vis-a-vis Lombardi. I suspect he comes out better in that comparison. My prediction is that we see Tambo in charge of the Oilers longer than Lombardi is manning the till in L.A. If they don't luck up Doughty and get past round two, he's gone by next draft. Could be it, too. There could be a lot of pressure in Los Angeles. Somebody said on the internet the other day that a possibility of a holdout exists, and I guess that's at this point you start to think about that. But Los Angeles had a lot of pressure on them. And I also think that it's been a tough year for Lombardi with the Penner trade that didn't really work out. The situation with regard to Ryan Smith and, you know, the fact that he asked to be traded. It's been a tough few months for Dean Lombardi, and that may well be part of the issue here. But here's hoping that it gets solved and we don't have to talk about it anymore. This from MGM. This is in regard to something Dusty said about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and whether or not he stays in junior or comes to the National Hockey League. He says, I definitely feel the sentiment of seeing a guy like Nugent-Hopkins before he really becomes big time in the show, albeit a lesser player. The pleasure of watching Sam Gagner in the Super Series the fall before he made the big club. And of course, you know, that really helped him catapult his way to the National Hockey League as a basically 18-year-old rookie in the fall of 2007. 1227, now joined by Cam Charron, who's a freelance writer for Leafs, Jets, in the NHL for Nation Network, the Canucks for SBM and the Hockey Network, and Hoops for CIS Blog. Cam, welcome and good afternoon.
Hello.
Let's talk a little bit about your role with the Nation Network. You write for several different publications, and you seem to be into secondary stats and specifically underlying statistics. Is that correct?
Yeah. Basically, a few months ago, Kent Wilson of Flames Nation approached me, and he one of our sister sites is also NHL Numbers. We wanted to, you know, talk a little bit more about player value and team value. So he brought me on board to talk about, you know, how some players and why some players and teams are successful. And then he wanted to also help me grow Canucks Army, Leafs Nation, and Jets Nation because I'm just out of university and I have a lot of free time on my hands.
Well, there you go. At least you're honest about it. What I like about your writing is that you don't come to the same old conclusions, and that's a good thing because it keeps you thinking, and it's worthwhile read, and you do back up your thoughts with stats. You wrote an article this week that got a lot of attention about two-way forwards. The money quote for me had Linus Omark as the Oilers' top defensive forward, or at least implied that. Can you explain your methodology and the result you came up with?
Well, the article doesn't really intend to say that Linus Omark is a good defensive forward. One of the comments on that post actually nailed it perfectly. He's kind of the least worst. We know that the Oilers have unfortunately some tough time preventing shots, and basically what I looked at was the amount of shots that they have prevented from behindthenet.ca, terrific site. And I adjusted it for the number of offensive and defensive zone starts, and it's something like 0.6 of a marginal shot either way. So I did a total number, and I also did a number for just their defensive opportunities. And Linus Omark just showed up at the top of each list, and I figured I'd include that with the post for all teams.
For me, a defensive forward is defined by a guy who plays a lot on the penalty kill and is at even strength. He'd be a time-on ice leader there without getting enormous power play minutes. That, to me, would be the entry level for a two-way forward or for a defensive forward. Is that a metric you look at when evaluating defensive forwards, or do you look at it from the exact other direction?
Well, what I looked at a few months ago, just sort of independently looked to see if the best defensive players at even strength were also the best ones on the penalty kill, and it turned out to be quite even on both sides. So it's not exactly that I discount penalty killing statistics, but you know, maybe some teams are better served putting these players who are good preventing shots at even strength, give them a little bit of penalty killing time, unless they are really valuable offensively. I'm not affiliated with Oilers management in any way. I can't really tell them how to run their hockey team, but you know, maybe there are some things that are some players that even strength were better at penalty, you know, who would be better at penalty kill and better served in that role.
It's interesting because back in the olden days, the Oilers did use Gretzky and Curry and all those guys on the penalty kill. So I thought it was an interesting item and something to keep in mind as we move forward. You also wrote an item on winning faceoffs and the value of winning faceoffs. Can you give your criteria there and what you found out? And then we'll discuss the penalty kill a little more.
Okay. I wanted to figure out how valuable a faceoff was. And this came in the wake of the Andrew Cogliano trade. The Anaheim Ducks Twitter account, they pointed out that he was the best faceoff man, he won the most faceoffs with Edmonton, which is true, but he was also one of the lowest in percentage. And Tyler Dello we all know Tyler Dello of MC79 Hockey, he wrote a post about the faceoffs and how it affected penalty killing, and his conclusion was that they weren't all that important. So I applied that to even strength, where most of the game is played, and what I looked at was whether face-off wins, whether they correlated in having a lot of shots on the net or off the net. I used the Corsi statistic, which is a terrific catch-all statistic, which counts goals, shots, misses, and blocks towards each net. I thought it was the best one to use because it shows how valuable a possession was. And it turns out that winning faceoffs did not correlate very well to the Corsi statistic, but location of the puck, location of the zone start, was way more correlative. So I think that when evaluating players, you want to look for players necessarily who move the puck north. And there are some players who are very good at faceoffs and not quite good at other facets of the game. And maybe those players might be overvalued a little bit. And I was certainly one of those early in the summer when I lobbied for the Canucks to sign Zenon Konopka, and he's pretty useless either way.
Well, you know, I find it interesting because it doesn't, you know, your initial thought earlier in the summer when you were talking at Konopka, this is my issue. Intuitively, it seems to make sense that if you can win a face-off in your own zone, for instance, that it would have a higher value. So I'm not as much a math guy as somebody like Tyler. Never let it be said that I am, but if intuitively you're finding information that is opposite to what you think it should be, maybe there's a way to have another look, or maybe we're not asking the right question. And I use an example of penalty kill. If we have a penalty kill and you lose the face-off and there's a shot on goal within 3 seconds after the face-off, wouldn't that be a way to possibly imply that the face-offs are vitally important, or is that too much of a stretch to make?
No, it's certainly a very valuable argument and a good assessment to make. And part of the problem is that if we're counting at the number of times where a shot resulted directly off a face-off win, we're kind of discounting all the times where a shot was created off a face-off loss or where a shot wasn't created off a face-off win. And when a face-off is won, the offensive players aren't really in the right position, but the defensive players are. And, you know, sort of opposite in the defensive zone when there's a defensive draw won, all the defensive players are kind of, or they're the ones who have the puck now, they're sort of ready to move out. They're more well positioned to a breakout. So I only really ran this for offensively, but certainly later in the summer there might be some hinging on defensive worth. But offensively, it doesn't look like there's much. And I think that there's very, really valid arguments to be made in favor of it. But you know, just because intuitively it seems like you have the puck. It's a good thing. Doesn't necessarily make it all that true. There are some teams that are really good at face-offs, for instance, that don't win a lot of hockey games. So, and those are the kinds of questions that we really need to ask. What sort of talents allow us to score goals and win hockey games?
Yeah, it's true. And I also think that an enormous amount of luck is involved. And
exactly.
I don't even know how to, you know, enter that into the math equation. Really quickly now, you also wrote an excellent article on Corsi Rel this week, highlighting Nick Sheridev as a star of the stat. Can you explain the stat and why it's important and why, really, hockey fans should pay attention to that?
All right, the Nick Sheridev article, it might have come out a couple weeks ago, but it keeps getting referenced over and over. Nick, he's kind of been my champion of the underlying numbers that no one seems to want to sign because of, you know, traditional methodologies. Corsi Rel, I briefly touched on Corsi earlier. It's goals, shots, misses, blocks. It's an advanced plus minus statistics, and relative, it means how well you did in relation to your teammates, how well you did versus how your teammates did when you were off the ice. So the players with high Corsi Rel are the players who are on the team, the ones who control the puck the most. And we know that when you control the puck the most, that's when you have more chance of scoring goals, setting up shots, setting up really quality shots. And that's so that's something that we really look at. And Nikolaj Jerdev has been well at the top of his team for the years that we've had the luxury of being able to count these statistics. And he also scores at an amazing rate. He just, you know, he didn't really get the right ice time, the right teammates. So some of his numbers suffered a little bit. And, you know, there's always some issues with him because he played under John Tortorella, and he's not exactly known as a player's coach. So, you know, we have, so Corsi Rel is really valuable to look at because it's possession oriented. And, it helps us determine exactly how valuable a certain player is to a certain team.
I think I like it because it shows progress year over year. Like a guy like Sam Gagner, I have arguments daily on my blog about Gagner not making progress. But if you look at his Corsi Rel over the years, even though his point totals have been in the 40s since a rookie, he really has made progress sending the puck in the right direction.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the times I'm not sure who wrote it, but I read it last year, something about a sophomore slump. How a lot of players they get lucky and they score a lot of goals in their rookie year, and then they get a little more snake bitten the next year. It's called the sophomore slump. But if you look at the underlying numbers, they generally tend to stay the same or progress year to year. So there are a lot of players that you can look at and say, okay, well, he didn't score, you know, he only scored 15 goals instead of 20, but he was better at controlling the puck. So he certainly had a good year.
Cam, thanks for this. I appreciate it very much.
All right, great to be on.
Okay, Cam Charron, he's everywhere. Freelancer for the Leafs, Jets, and the NHL for Nation Radio, Canucks for SBN, and he talks hoops for CIS blog, and we'll no doubt have him back. Interesting stuff there. We got a little deep into stats, but I think it's worthwhile, and hopefully something you enjoyed. I know you're going to enjoy our next guest, Pat McLean from Black Dog Hates Skunks. We'll talk about him and to him next.